So text a gift offering.
That will not go in the episode, FYI, because that could be construed as very offensive. So it's been a couple of weeks. We've had some radio silence on the New American Storytellers. We've gotten all kinds of concerned letters, just people writing in saying, where are you? Where are you? Mike, you got a telegram. It was a telegram last week.
It was from, yeah, it was a similar.
Sort of dot, 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 dash, dash, dash.
Sherlock Holmes, right. You know, didn't fall off a cliff and die, you know,
right.
For trying to bring him back. And
right.
So we said, okay.
Right. So we weren't sure. We assumed
that
was.
How did you receive that, Mike? Is that your old telegraph machine you have?
Apparently.
Well, it was actually. It was the stock market ticker tape machine, actually. You actually received a telegram through the ticker tape machine.
From the Occupy Wall.
And then we had a ticker tape parade.
Hey, welcome to the New American Storytellers podcast. I'm Shepard Ollers, and I'm here with David Altrogi and Michael Hartnett. We are a part of a community of storytellers and filmmakers called Vinegar Hill. You can check us online at vinegarhillstory.com. So listeners, while we've been gone, one of the things that we've been working on is getting a new podcast hosting service. So we'll be switching over the next few months just to be sure that everyone's on it. It's really simple. Just go to newamericanstorytellers.com, hit listen to our podcast, and hit subscribe. We took 2 weeks off to do pre-production on our feature film, Twin Reflex. And we're back in the saddle, New American Storytellers. So this week we're talking about the heist, how to steal like an artist.
How do you do a heist? You know, we usually talk about storytelling, but we're changing things up a little bit. We're changing our business model, our MO, modus operandi.
Tell us what we've actually been doing the last 2 weeks.
Well, we haven't been prepping for a movie. We've been prepping for a heist, baby.
We are renaming ourselves the Rat Pack.
Maybe the
I hate Sinatra.
Yeah.
I want to punch him in the face.
And
wow.
You may be getting some to a large demographic.
Maybe we'll get some fame.
Our baby boomer listener rate has just dropped.
Right.
There's two kinds of streams of thought that I've seen out there. There's the one stream of thought that's like, originality is king. Like, if you want to do any good kind of art, you have to do something that's never, ever, ever, ever been done before. Maybe I'm just not smart enough to create that kind of art, because I think there's a way that you can be influenced by other works of art, other films, other stories, mm-hmm. without just blatantly stealing.
Who was
from
it
them.
That said that all art is stealing?
I've heard that attributed to Tom York. I've heard that attributed to
Abraham Lincoln.
Wait, I've heard that attributed to so many people. Who is the playwright? Who wrote The Importance of Being Earnest?
Who am I talking about?
You have an iPhone.
See, I guess I could pull.
Oh, we should probably put those on silent. Though.
Mine is on silent. Okay, I'm way silent. Ahead of you. Come on,
Oscar Wilde.
I guess the question we're posing on today's episode: how can you be influenced by other films, other works of art, without just totally stealing?
How about let's rephrase that. How do you steal well? Right. Like how do you really just like steal without people knowing? Because that's what a heist is. Like you pull something off, and if it's effectively pulled off, nobody knows you did it, right?
Mm. Whoa.
Everybody has a smoke screen in front of their eyes.
You could either make a diamond. What's is easier?
Right.
Make a diamond or steal a diamond. Or both.
I'm going to go with steal.
Yeah. Wait. So we're going to steal a diamond, but how do we do it without, you know, how do we keep the
charade
up?
Where everyone thinks you made it.
Well, and while keeping our integrity.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because the guys who pull off heists are men of a high moral code. You know, they have a high
supposedly,
moral code.
Supposedly, according to Hollywood.
According
to the Muppet Caper.
Mm.
Yes.
Scene 33B, shot A, Kermit says, and I quote, I'm not going to quote Kermit today. So that's the question.
Really,
how do you... How
we are men of high moral code.
Ooh, it's actually an Oscar.
Wow.
That's actually...
Wow, that was really bad. That was that was sort of the Swedish Chef with a little bit of... I don't even know what that was.
A little Oscar Wilde.
That was a little Oscar Wilde for my tastes right there, that Kermit imitation.
That's awesome.
It was a good try. Shep, that was good.
We need more of
good
that.
Try. Well, is originality king? I guess there's two ways. Is stealing well, because I know that there's people listening right now who are like really about to break their computers because they are getting really angry.
Mm-hmm. Unless they're listening via telegraph and they're probably
right, ticker tape. Is originality king?
Mike, you're good at playing the devil's advocate. You want to come in here and attack this idea?
I think it's a terrible idea. Devil's advocate over.
Let me share an example.
All right, do it.
Let me share an example first.
Preach to us, brother.
I'm going to make the argument that originality is not king. Originality in and of itself. Originality
in a vacuum.
For its own sake. Being original just to be original is bunk. Because I think you're going to just create some really stupid art for the most part.
So what you're saying is, like, 2001 is stupid.
2001, A Space Odyssey is stupid.
Yes. Well, it's original.
No, what I'm saying,
Rewind. So what you're saying is 2001, A Space Odyssey is unoriginal.
No, I'm saying originality, if that's your goal in setting out to make a film, if your goal is to be original, just to be original, you're probably going to come out with something pretty stupid, I think. Because you're going to be like those kids who are like, man, I hate what everybody else is wearing, so I'm going to be original. You're going to be like I was in high school, really. Like, I hated that everybody was wearing Abercrombie and Nike. And so I was like, I'm going to be original. So I grew like an Amish beard and wore like Bugle Boy cargo pants that were way too short for me because it was original. But there's nothing good about that. There's nothing tasteful about that kind of originality.
Right.
There was nothing.
It wasn't even original. The Amish had done it
well,
first.
Well, yeah, exactly. There was no artistic integrity there. So I'm saying that originality for its own sake, as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, as an artist, if that's your end goal, then bam, you're in for
because
some
wit's
trouble.
All been done before.
Wit's all been done before?
Yeah, that was bad. It felt like a good idea at the time.
I'm not sure what the reference is that you're making.
But it's a pun.
It's a reason we haven't done this in 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh. We are burning out here.
It's so bad.
Is it the topic or are you guys just really tired? Because I'm
a little tired.
I'm doing the majority of the talking here.
Well, yeah, but yeah.
My question I'm throwing out to you, Michael and Shepard. Is what should be the goal of the artist, filmmaker, storyteller? Originality, or is there a way that you can learn from, be inspired by, and even, dare I say it, borrow from other works of art in a way that will make original art?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question because it seems like Spielberg, he's credited for a lot of things, but he never was, for example, the original filmmaker. He was inspired by and borrowed from a lot of other filmmakers in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously there are people that paved the way for Spielberg.
Sure.
And he was okay with stealing from those artists.
But what's the difference between a Spielberg who you could obviously say owes a lot to Alfred Hitchcock and John Ford and the greats of the past and the filmmakers who brought you, for example, the movie Gooby. If you haven't seen it, it's a really...
We've talked about
There's some
before.
Good intentions in it, but it really is a beat-for-beat ripoff of right. E.T. But what's the difference? Because those filmmakers, Gooby is a movie about a kid who finds a bear in his closet, a lifelike bear who comes to life, and sort of they go on misadventures, and he helps them sort of come of age.
Culminating in them flying a radio flyer...
Wagon
over the
like
sun,
the sun
or
the moon, or something. Yeah. But they could say, "Well, look, we were just Spielberg was influenced by Ford, and Hitchcock were influenced by Spielberg."
And it's not an extraterrestrial; it's a bear with
a
Scottish
bear,
accent about 50% of the time.
So is it just,
people say mimicry is the best
form
of complimentary?
Is it just trickery? Is it just trickery? Like we just want to hide? I mean, is that the way to do it? Like you just as long as people don't know what you're ripping off, then you're really not ripping it off. You know, like because then I mean. What's the difference between what Spielberg does and a lot of the stock music that's like, you know...
Very similar to
sounds exactly
Harry
note
Potter.
For note like Harry Potter.
But Spielberg was doing things...
Do, 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 do. Oh, and you're like, what? Wait a second. You know, it's like two notes off the Harry Potter theme or the Jurassic Park
what
theme.
What Spielberg did was original. And I think that's what it comes down to in its components is, like, it contains things that are borrowed from... For example, John Ford or Orson Welles or, you know, just like any number of people that Spielberg was inspired by. But he took it to this whole another level.
What I think it comes down to is an internalization and a synthesis of the things that inspire you and that you love. And what I mean by that, Mike is sort of rolling his eyes. His eyes are glassing over right now.
Pretty much.
What I mean by that is this. So John Coltrane wrote this amazing, amazing piece of music. Mike is rolling his eyes because he hates Coltrane, but that's because he doesn't really know what's good in life. John Coltrane wrote this amazing piece of music called Giant Steps, and it was like one of the most influential pieces of jazz in the history of jazz. And I was talking to my buddy who is an amazing jazz pianist, is getting like his doctorate in jazz, and I was just asking him about Giant Steps. And he told me, he was like, Giant Steps, really, what John Coltrane did for Giant Steps was there was this piece of music that was written for sort of classical exercises, written years and years and years and years before. That was just, and it was just these weirdo chords to sort of exercise your hands on the piano. And what John Coltrane did was he took that and put this classical piece of music, it was really just an exercise, and took it really chord for chord and turned it, took it into the world of jazz, recontextualized it, brought it in with all of his jazz background, everything he knew about jazz, and then synthesized this piece of classical music with his jazz background and created this totally revolutionary, totally new piece of art, piece of music. But it was chord for chord something someone else had written.
Right.
And to me, I guess I guess when I think about, like, how do you be original but also be able to enjoy other people's art and learn from it and be inspired by it and take different pieces from it. And I think it's, at least what I have seen in my experience thus far, is it is really just soaking in lots of different right. stories, lots of different art, and not thinking like, man, I love the new Sherlock Holmes, so I'm going to make a Sherlock Holmes movie. But just letting it wash over you, letting, absorbing all that stuff, and then letting those things, kind of combining all those things, and then out will come, I think, right. if done right, out will come something that's new and original. Because I think that's what Spielberg did. He, there are a lot of, you can see the influences in his work, but it's totally Spielberg, because he's pulling from all these different filmmakers, you know, Italian filmmakers, and then classic American filmmakers, and he's synthesizing them in a way that only Spielberg can, and there's something fresh, there's something new.
In answer to your question, David, this is Mike speaking. David, this is Mike speaking.
Beep, come in.
Come in, David. This is Mike. Over.
Permission to speak granted.
All right. How you doing, everybody? Basically, I think that the goal for every filmmaker storyteller should be to make a good movie and tell a good story and tell a story that really that only they could tell in the way that only they could tell it.
Right.
So it has to have, if you're just going to try and parody somebody else's work, I think that honestly, like the way that you can rip stuff off and be influenced without, or honestly, maybe I should rephrase that. The way that you can be influenced without ripping people off is by being really aware of just like sticking to what the way that you would tell the story is, and being really, really true to the way that you understand the story, and, make it very much you that's talking and not trying to like rip off and say, I'm just going to do a take on a Hitchcock piece and then totally lose any voice that you have.
Yeah.
If everybody's got their own voice and style. And I think that as you get better at doing things, like you're going to develop that more and it's going to become more unique and more, some might say, original. But it's honestly, it's just you processing a lot of other stuff out there and adding that little thing that everybody does have, like, I don't even know what percentage it is, like 1% of originality in them.
Right.
But mixed in with a lot of other influences churns out stuff that is very cool and very original. So you could point to a lot of movies like that, you know, ones that people would herald as groundbreaking original, like 2001 Space Odyssey. There was a progression there that film couldn't have happened without ones that happened before it.
Mm-hmm.
And so to say that something original comes out of nowhere, I think is a common misconception.
Well, I think, like, to me, like, look at the original, the first 1977 Star Wars, is you could, on one hand, you could say it's completely original, but on the other hand, you could say it's completely unoriginal, because, you know, Lucas took these very classic archetypes that had been used in story after story, but then there was this complete an awesome recontextualization where he took them to outer space, and he, you know, I think there was, and he took all these sort of sci-fi influences and put them in a world that was so fresh and original.
Right.
And I mean, even like, think about like the Beatles. Like, they were always, I mean, their influences were like early, like Elvis Presley rock and roll, mm-hmm. Buddy Holly, all this sort of like skiffle type rock music. But then even as you get to like Sgt. Pepper, where they were really beginning to like, really beginning to totally revolutionize things, there was still these sort of, they were still referencing like Buddy Holly, and there were still these, that background,
were,
you know what I mean?
They were synthesizing new influences as well. I mean, George Harrison, the Indian infatuation with Indian mm-hmm. music was starting to come in there. It mm-hmm. started with Revolver. So that is interesting. Like, you can't create in a void. You can't create in a vacuum.
Right. Well, even it's like when Paul McCartney was working, when they were working on Sgt. Pepper, Paul McCartney was super into avant-garde, this really wacky, weird avant-garde music, which, I mean, today, most people would have no idea who those musicians were. But Paul McCartney, what he was able to do was synthesize that avant-garde, and wasn't just like, wow, I want to make like this great avant-garde album. But he synthesized it and then brought in these other influences, like vaudeville music from his childhood. The song When I'm 64 has this real vaudevillian flavor to it. And then, you know, it has John Lennon's sort of blues, sort of psychedelic with sounds. So just as, to me, I don't know, I guess Sgt. Pepper and the Beatles and Revolver, that whole era where sort of these new influences were being synthesized with their old influences, and out was coming something really new and revolutionary.
Right. But they couldn't have made that without first almost explicitly copying other artists. I mean, they were doing covers when they started.
Yeah.
So there was a progression in their own artistry mm-hmm. from blatantly ripping off other artists and adding their own flair to it to actually creating something that many would consider very original.
Right.
Is that process similar for us? I mean,
I think so. I mean, I was just gonna, I'm glad you asked that, Shepard, because I was just gonna take it there.
And I being David.
I being David. I David. I robot and I David. So yeah, I mean, I guess how does that work for our story process? How did that work for Twin Reflex? How did that work for The Cosmonaut, our short film? How did that not work for The Interventionist? I'll start with how it didn't work. I'll start The Interventionist. I mean, I can tell you right now that the influences for The Interventionist, I should say influence really, because it was pretty much
two.
Well, there was Fantastic Mr. Fox on the sort of trying to be
just
witty and dry, and no, in the movie I was trying to write it like Wes Anderson and failing because I'm not Wes Anderson, but that was kind of what was popular at the time, and everyone was loving Wes Anderson, so I thought, oh, I can do a Wes Anderson film. So there was no synthesizing of Wes Anderson, and it was just sort of like I just sort of ripped off Wes Anderson and did it horribly. And then what were the other influences?
The world doesn't need another Wes.
Well, unfortunately, No Country for Old Men and The Dark Knight were kind of thrown into the pot.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, sort of a weird stew.
It's if you're going to put a few things in a blender, like, and blend them together, be careful.
Well, I mean, because sometimes things that are on very far ends of the spectrum together make really cool stuff.
Well, I mean, it can be some amazing juxtaposition, like Star Wars. Like, you have the sci-fi and then the very classic, and bam, together create something awesome.
I love how Gattaca combines like the sci-fi world with kind of a 1940s classic architecture and style, and that works. But it's really well synthesized. It's really well thought out, and it plays within the rules.
Right.
But with The Interventionist, I think we had a little different.
It was sort of like garlic and mango.
I think it was
like a garlic mango smoothie, garlic onion and mango smoothie.
You may like garlic, you may like mango, but together,
wow, was it potent?
Yeah,
potently bad.
And I think that in that we didn't have our own voice to interject in there. And I think as a young artist, like, you have a little bit less of your own voice that you're developing. So I think it's okay to be paying homages and to be copying people's styles in an effort to, you know, the things that you like, mimic the things that you like, because you're going to start to build your own style and your own voice as you relax and allow that, like, little 1% to actually start to influence stuff. But you do have to be really careful about watching other people's films while you're writing, about writing right after watching someone's film.
My dad is a amazing songwriter, and he said the way he learned to write songs was he would listen to Beatles songs and basically copy them, but then write his own songs. So I think there is a place, if you're aware, like, I just want to learn how to write, so I'm going to, you know, I think it would be a really good exercise if you want to write a sci-fi. Look at, like, Alien and, like, look at the act structure, look at sort of how the scene unfolds, and write your own. Just be aware that, like, this is an exercise. This is not, like,
It's like I'm not gonna make you're stealing this. Small time.
One of the classic things that they have art students do is go to art museums and sit down with a sketch pad in front of the great works of art and copy them to learn to paint them. But those stay in a sketchbook. Those stay in the learning process. They don't, you don't take that to a museum and they're like, voila, look. And then they're like, looks kind of like the Mona Lisa, except not as good. Except
not as good. That's the big point is, like, you're not going to come out of the gate and make something that's as good as your influences.
Right. Right.
They've done it well because they've already synthesized it. They've already gone through the creative process. They've already stolen well.
Right. Steal well. So I think as of recently, what we've been trying to do with, like, Twin Reflex and the Cosmonaut...
What we still are trying to do.
I'm trying to soak in a lot of influences. And doing so, not thinking, like, I'm going to watch this movie for inspiration, but just enjoying watching movies. Like, so, enjoying watching movies and then letting that sort of trickle down and trickle through sort of my own sensibilities and our own sensibilities to implement in Twin Reflex. So I think there's been a lot of different sort of rivers feeding into Twin Reflex. We have a lot of tributaries kind of coming in as far as movies like Ballast and Monsters, movies like Moon, movies like The Conversation, very different films, even The Shining recently, just different films inspiring different ideas for different aspects, and then we're trying to sort of mold them into this story that Twin Reflex
is becoming. Sometimes it's helpful when you're watching movies that are completely different than the movie you're working on. Sometimes that is helpful because you can't possibly copy it into your film. When working on the script revision for Twin Reflex, I watched 2001 for the first time, which I say kind of regretfully that I've never watched it before. It was incredible. It was also something where I couldn't possibly really be too far influenced in my writing. But at the same time, I was able to be inspired by the visuals and the way the story was told to go, okay, I want to do something. I want to actually put something down to paper. So
there's a difference between stealing the whole diamond and just stealing a facet of it.
I like it. Waka waka.
If you steal a facet, probably nobody's going to know. There's something that can be, honestly, sort of a compliment.
One aspect from Twin Reflex, just a facet that we lifted, was from the movie Monsters, just in how they made the film, how there was a lot of improvisation, how there was a very, they made it like a documentary, and that was, we really liked that aspect, that facet, if you will, and responded to that and said, man, this would work really well in our story.
Our movie will not have dinosaur, alien kind of things floating around and wreaking havoc on the world. It won't be taking place in Central America. It won't be a story about a couple people trying to get back to America. There's an aspect of it that is taken from, lifted from, stolen from, that I think that can be attributed to them.
Well, there's a painting by Caravaggio called The Calling of St. Matthew, where Jesus is calling St. Matthew. It's an amazing painting. And in the painting, Jesus has his hand outstretched, and his hand is exactly like the hand of God in Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel, which is it's a really cool sort of
homage,
but it's saying something really new about Jesus, about the calling of St. Matthew, and kind of using that facet of Michelangelo's Sistine Chapel to say something that Michelangelo was not saying, and to say something that, which is pretty cool, I think. But he didn't steal the whole, it wasn't like he made like an exact sort of the same composition and Matthew sort of laying sort of
like Adam.
Laying like Adam. I mean, it was just subtle. It was one facet that was, and then all kinds of other influences brought in there as well from different artists to create something new and fresh. So I think you can steal, you just have to be tasteful about how you steal.
Right.
Just have to be. So, I mean, as far as the process of getting inspiration, or if you're sitting down and about to start writing a movie, what do you guys think is what are some good guides for measuring, am I stealing well or am I just stealing badly? Michael, do you have something you want to say? The senator from Maryland has the floor.
I think that if you're the entire time that you're writing or brainstorming your story, you just want desperately to go watch this other movie, the more you think about your story.
One movie.
I think that you fail. So, like, if you're writing this and you're just imagining the soundtrack of that movie and then all of a sudden thinking about the visuals of that movie and thinking about your character as sort of like a knockoff Leonardo DiCaprio from Inception, probably starting to have... Right. You stall too much.
Or if sort of beat for beat is looking like one individual film or one piece of art, then there's some danger there.
Right.
You should be excited about your story for its own sake and like be borrowing ideas, but not like lifting whole storylines or whole characters. Because there is the difference between creating an homage, kind of creating the illusion of like stealing, but without actually like completely lifting and removing. There is aspects of completely lifting, but your story is its own thing. It's going to define itself, and it needs to define itself.
Yeah. So learn to steal well, learn to be a thief and an artful dodger, and you shall do great things.
So we've been switching our podcast over to new podcast hosting service called SoundCloud. This means that it's all hosted in one place. There's only one small bump in the road, and that is getting everyone onto this new service. So be sure to go to newamericanstorytellers.com, click on Listen to Our Podcast, and be sure you're subscribed to our latest feed.